and welcome to the latest episode of IT Life Radio, the show for you, the IT pro, the technologist, the futurist, and the maker. I'm your host, Executive Editor Dave Wagner. Today we're talking IT hiring, a topic near and dear to all of our hearts, I'm sure. Specifically, we're talking about it from the point of view of culture, what it means to all of us, and how it can make us better hirers, recruiters, and happier workers. To do that, I've got Sarah Nahm. Sarah Nahm is CEO and founder of the firm Lever, a modern software company for helping companies recruit and grow their teams. Before Lever, Sarah worked in product at Google and studied design and engineering at Stanford University. Welcome, Sarah.
Hi, Dave. It's great to be here.
Yeah, thanks. We're glad to have you. So I'm really curious, before we get talking about culture, what I'd really like to know from you right now is, what is the IT hiring environment like from the point of view of both companies and job seekers? We hear a lot about a talent gap, and we hear a lot about low unemployment in IT in the IT professional space. What does that mean, really, in practical terms for the recruiting space right now?
Absolutely. So, you know, Lever, our software, powers the hiring process at a number of companies, including some of, you know, Silicon Valley's fastest-growing companies, Foursquare, Lyft, Quora, Reddit, GitHub, Box, and Yelp. So we really have a front row seat to the trends that we're seeing in how hiring's changing in Silicon Valley and beyond. And I think that there really are three trends that will probably sound familiar to a lot of the IT and management audience out there. Trend number one, the competition for IT and STEM talent has never been more intense. You know, I think this is something that people probably feel qualitatively, but, you know, quantitatively, a study by McKinsey found that 9 out of 10 executives say they have a pressing need for STEM and tech talent. That would be developers, analysts, even designers, and that you're seeing a 2x longer time to fill compared to your average hiring process. Trend number two is definitely that, you know, the millennial workforce is really changing people's expectations about work. And, you know, you've probably heard a lot of reference to the fact that one of the biggest ways that millennials are shaking up kind of the industry out there, especially on the recruiting front, is that they just don't plan to stay at companies quite as long as the previous generation. You know, the Guardian ran a survey and found that 90% of millennials don't plan to stay with their current employer for more than 5 years. So that obviously presents a really big challenge to, you know, a manager, a recruiting team, in that even just the natural attrition you'd expect in kind of the new generation of workers is much higher and creates an even more pressing need to be recruiting. And then I think the third one is really that the best people out there aren't actively looking. They're not actively applying to your jobs. They're usually, you know, quite successful and therefore happy at their current positions. Managers, I think, know this intuitively and have probably already taken steps to, you know, reach out to folks on LinkedIn to nurture kind of long-term relationships with the best people out there. And I think that actually presents a really interesting opportunity when you're thinking about hiring and recruiting in the IT space, because, you know, maybe only 25% of the workforce is actively looking at any given time, but LinkedIn reports that 85% is willing to talk about new opportunities. So I think those three trends really kind of drive to the bottom line, which is, you know, if you're really looking to engage top talent, if you're looking to engage the millennial workforce, it just demands a really different strategy on the hiring front. And I think that IT is leading the way to really developing, you know, kind of new ideas, new creative and dynamic strategies to address those changes.
Right. Well, there's a lot there, and I'd like to talk about as much of it as possible. But one thing that struck me first about that is that trends two and three are sort of a little bit at odds with each other, right? When you say that millennials are looking to move faster, yet most people are happy at their job, Does that mean that our goal is to sort of catch people right at the moment they're ready to leave? Is that the best way to do this? Or is this an age gap thing that the happier workers are the older workers? How do those two work together? Because they seem both intuitively true to me at the same time, yet partially contradictory.
Yeah. You know, I think that it really comes down to who is kind of the profile of, you know, the top tier IT talent out there. These are typically people who are, you know, driven and motivated by a really different thing than the preceding generation. It used to be enough to just have a steady job and to earn a salary. But I think that you're seeing in especially the tech and IT space, people want more out of their careers. They're really motivated by opportunities for growth, both personal and professional, and chances to learn and kind of evolve their scope of work. So I think the reason millennials are looking to change jobs more frequently is because they're always on the lookout for exciting opportunities to learn, to grow, and to kind of like take on their next challenge. And I think that also is why the best people, you know, may not be actively looking. You know, they've been seeking that growth. They're probably happily, you know, tackling new challenges at their current job, but they're willing to talk because they're always on the lookout for opportunities to take the next challenge, to step up to the next level. So I think it really points to actually the reasons why companies are starting to think differently about jobs, about the definition of the opportunities they have to present, and really why culture is at the heart of it. Because, you know, again, people are looking for opportunities, they're looking for growth. Those are all things that really plug into, you know, kind of culture being at the core of the conversation.
Right. Well, so my biggest struggle right now here is that I have so many questions, I can't figure out what order to ask them in. So let me try to start from the point of view of a hiring manager or a hiring company, because one of the things here we have is two sides of a coin, right? Let's start with managers here, and you said, or companies. You said companies are really starting to rethink the way they present jobs and the way they look at jobs and the way they hire. What are some of the ways that you're seeing that change?
Absolutely. You know, I can really tell this kind of with a story very close to home. You know, we at Lever think very, very deeply and creatively about our hiring process and have kind of the opportunity of, you know, being on the forefront out there and being able to see kind of the things that are working and put that in play for our own company. So we've grown quite a bit. We've quadrupled the size of our team in the past year. And a big part of that has been rethinking how we talk about the opportunities at Lever. You know, we're competing in the exact same talent pool as the Googles and the Facebooks out there, but don't have nearly the resources or the brand recognition. So one thing that we started doing really early on was to start defining kind of our job descriptions in a little bit of a different way. Instead of describing it as your traditional requirements and responsibilities, we started framing our opportunities as chances for growth. And that for us formulated as describing what, you know, the candidate would get the chance to teach, to learn, and to own internally on our team. And we really laid that out in terms of a roadmap of what they'd accomplish in their first month, in their first 3 months, 6 months, and 12 months. And ever since we made that change, literally in how we do our job descriptions on our careers page, we've seen an incredible amount of traction because, again, it's just a proof point that people are attracted to opportunities for growth. And I think that it spoke a lot towards, you know, the way that we think about, you know, kind of the relationship between Lever and its employees, and really attracted people and to, you know, the way we thought about it, to our culture, and really put culture as the forefront of how we even did our job descriptions.
I love that. To teach and to learn and to own. I think those are really the three things people are looking for in a job, aren't they? They They want to share what they know, and they want to know new things, and they want to have some pride and some ownership in what they're doing. I think that's really great. And what I like about that is, as you said at the end of your answer, is it dovetails really nicely into what we're talking about when we talk about culture. I think a lot of times when we think of a company's culture, we think about things like, hey, it's casual Friday, or hey, we serve breakfast every day, or even worse yet, sometimes when we talk about culture, we're like, we're a bunch of white dudes, so we're going to hire another white dude so they fit in, right? That doesn't seem to be at all what you're talking about when you're talking about culture. Can you talk a little bit about what culture means to you?
Absolutely. You know, I think that this is what culture means to us at Lever, and also what, you know, culture means at some of the most kind of like advanced tech companies out there. I think one common misconception about culture is that it's all about the perks. It's the free lunch, the ping pong table, the team offsites, and all the things that make work kind of fun and quirky. You know, you see a lot of folks on their careers page highlighting the perks in lieu of actually speaking to kind of the substance of who they are. So to me, I really think that culture isn't about the perks. It's actually about how a company defines success. Culture truly is about who gets hired and who gets promoted, and implicitly, you know, who gets fired. It's really about how kind of the entire company from leadership down creates a culture of understanding, you know, what are the patterns of success that get rewarded and what are the pathways for growth that are encouraged. And I think when you really think about it, that's kind of why the best companies, you know, every single person there is inherently motivated by culture, because they're able to understand how the culture creates a framework for them to succeed, to be driven, and to make sure that the things that they're doing in their day-to-day align with kind of the top-level goals of the business.
Well, that sounds lovely. I have to say, though, with all due respect to the many companies I've worked for, and I've enjoyed many of my jobs, and I like this one in case the right people are listening, I don't know a lot of companies that talk about culture that way. Most of the time when I hear about culture, I don't hear about who gets hired, who gets promoted, who succeeds. How do you begin the transformation to talk that way? That seems like a huge step forward. And one of the ways I know you're going to say, and because you've said your answer before, is changing the way you do your job descriptions. But there must be more to it than that. How did you guys start that journey to get beyond the sort of superficial way we think about culture?
Yeah, you know, I definitely think that the first trigger point for any business, and this was definitely true at Lever, is when you're starting to really step on the gas with hiring. I think that running an efficient and effective hiring process is an obvious goal for any executive, especially when you're operating in this competitive talent market. And so you have to start getting really focused on understanding what kind of candidate becomes a great team member. You know, in the pool of people out there, who is the perfect fit for being a top performer at your business? And so recruiting is really the trigger point for starting those discussions. And I think the best way for people to pivot that into actual action is to start looking at the people who are top performers in their team. So take the people that you wish you had 10 more of, 20 more of, and try to break out what sets them apart. What about them is so true and resonates with kind of the company overall, with the team dynamic, and try to identify either what hard skills or soft skills they have that makes you want to fill an entire room with people just like them. And that then gives you a really crisp picture on what attributes are important to you in hiring, and it starts to really organically solidify a definition of the culture, or maybe even subculture, that your team kind of has created as the best pathway towards success.
Well, that sounds good, but what if I just got lucky? I'm not trying to be flip here, right? Because one of the things that we know about managers is that a lot of them are really good at their job, and that's why they got promoted to manager, but they're not necessarily well trained in the art of hiring. I don't know where to go to learn how to be a better hiring manager. You know what I mean? How do we do a better job of that?
Yeah, hiring manager is nobody's job description, right? That's
right.
Nobody's title. I think that hiring definitely seems like an incredibly daunting task to somebody getting started kind of right at the get-go. But I think what is definitely true in the IT sector is that people who are leaders, who are managers, have habitually displayed a pattern of, applying themselves to a new problem and being able to kind of learn on a steep learning curve and solve it. I think in many ways, people expect there to be a recipe for recruiting. And I think that honestly, effective recruiting, is going to be incredibly specific to your business, to your team, and to your goals. So it may be maybe reassuring to people out there to know that there really is no better person to run the hiring for your team than somebody who genuinely understands the team. And so, actual managers in IT, they're not coming from a disadvantage just because they've not been professional recruiters. They actually have better access to candidates out there. An email from an engineering manager is much more likely to get read by an engineer. They also are able to more quickly identify kind of diamonds in the rough, people that clearly have the skill but maybe, aren't obvious about it, don't have the obvious kind of pedigree, but really possess the capability. And I think that they're also much better at a really key part of the recruiting process, which is figuring out kind of like a way to sell and close the candidate, positioning the opportunity in language that makes sense to somebody, being able to really form that connection and articulate to them what, is in it for them in the new business. So, what IT professionals do need to improve is just understanding kind of like the rough pipeline process to really work closely with, maybe HR recruiting inside the org to leverage their abilities to help manage the administrative aspects of the process, and also realize that a recruiting partner, when you form that partnership really well, can be an incredible asset to your team in terms of being able to improve efficiency, effectiveness, and just really understand how to do it at scale. So I would say that a hiring manager, even a new one, already has innate advantages in connecting with the talent pool, but can always level up just like they would in any management practice on just being able to do recruiting more effectively, have greater impact, and be able to do it at ever greater scales.
Right. Well, there are two parts of that answer I'd really like to dive a little deeper into. Early on in the answer, you said that there's no recipe for hiring, and that makes sense to me. But it brings back sort of something I already brought up before, but I think it's really important to hit this hard because I think it's really important to get this right, especially with the lack of diversity in IT. We've been seeing it places like Google and Apple, and big companies are admitting to their problems with diversity lately. One of the things that you mentioned early on is that it helps to say, well, I wish I had 20 of these people. I wish I had a whole room full of these people. What makes these people tick, right? What I'm afraid that's going to lead to is somebody saying, oh, well, this person's an Ivy League graduate. He comes from a upper middle class background. He's white or whatever, so I'm going to hire as many Ivy League, upper middle class white guys as I can find, right? How do we avoid that sort of simplistic thinking to get a room full of 20 people just like that one, but they don't all actually look the same?
Yeah, I think that the basically phenomenon you're pointing to that I think is very true is that hiring can create positive feedback loops, and that hiring is probably the most critical mechanism in defining the evolution of a company's culture, because the people there are the drivers of culture. And I think that those positive feedback loops, they can either be very helpful and empowering and enabling, or they can be very harmful. And to me, it's all about, you know, whether a manager or an executive team really engages in kind of the definition of success at a level that is pure, kind of simple surface heuristics, or whether it's actually digging deeper to really, again, define what it is at the level of skills, attributes, or kind of approach that is, you know, a little bit more, I'd say, deep, right? I think actually culture, when defined as success, can be incredibly democratizing, because it means that, you know, leadership can spend the time articulating, you know, things at a level that goes deeper than what school you went to, what, you know, workplaces you've been a part of. You can start to identify the skills that are really core to success at your company. I mean, one example here at Lever, empathy is a really big part of how we define success, that people who can empathize with both our customers as well as their coworkers and the teams that maybe they have to collaborate with, that it leads to better communication, more kind of creative brainstorming and generation of innovative ideas, and frankly, like a better ability to execute. And it took us months, I'd say, to really identify that as being the attribute we were looking for, and us as a management team collaborated with our internal recruiting folks to actually then describe, you know, this attribute in greater detail, to write down questions and kind of like actual interview kind of strategies that could help elicit those things. And frankly, to democratize the ability to identify empathy for all of our interviewers across the company, whether they be engineers or salespeople or executives. So I think that the idea that you can go deeper in culture, it definitely involves a lot more work, consideration, and attention from, I'd say, the top people at the company. But once you actually identify it, formalize it, and then democratize it within the business, it can then be an incredibly powerful investment in creating a healthy feedback loop around culture. I think, you know, it's obvious that when people come into a new company, they're super excited, and their first step is usually to refer all the people that they've worked with in the past. Well, if you can really focus on bringing in the people that are cultural fits for the right reasons, they'll continue to then bring in other folks that are cultural fits for the right reason. And that then creates a really healthy positive feedback loop of reinforcing the attributes that make sense at your company without relying on really shallow surface level heuristics.
Right. So things like empathy or flexibility of thought or whatever work in your workspace make far more sense, because you can have any gender or any skin tone or any education and still have those skills. That makes sense to me. So there was another thing you said in your previous answer that I thought was pretty interesting. I think it'll help us springboard over to talking about job seekers a little bit too, because I know we have a lot of job seekers listening in to the show today. You said that a good hiring manager knows how to close and sell the job. And that's interesting to me, because I have to say, maybe it's more of a lack of my skill set or talent. I don't feel like anyone's ever tried to sell me on a job or close me. I always feel like they always treat the job seeker like you're doing them a favor for offering the job. So is this a new trend, or is this something that I'm just missing out on? Are we seeing more companies having to sell IT pros on a job?
Yeah, I think it is a new trend. There have been so many studies and surveys that basically prove out the point that the new generation of workforce is really motivated by a mission, by kind of like opportunities to challenge themselves, and will actually rank mission as being more important to them than compensation. So there's actual sort of hardline evidence that people's priorities about work is changing, and any business that doesn't sort of acknowledge that, you know, mission, having one, having a clear goal, can actually be a massive driver of, you know, success in closing and attracting and retaining top-tier talent, you know, they're losing a competitive advantage. It really does affect the bottom line. So I would say that, you know, I've never ever talked to a candidate who didn't ask me about Lever's culture. 100% of interviews that I've run, it comes up as a topic that is incredibly important to people who generally take their careers very seriously and who see professional success as being really core and important to them in their personal lives. So, you know, this is, I'd say, true for IT professionals across the board and nowhere more true than in that top, you know, 5, 10% of the talent pool who really are the people you want to hire. So I think that on the whole, managers should really push themselves to, again, discipline themselves around what their opportunities have from a candidate's perspective. What can that candidate learn on the job? What can they teach other people? What do they have a chance to own? And I think the real compelling idea is, what do they have the chance to improve? What will sort of the entire business ask of them to do to really help, you know, either kind of with growth, with improvement, with anything that has to do with the impact that that person's going to have on the job? And, you know, this is really a win-win. A manager wants motivated people who are seeking impact, who are going to improve the team, who are going to take something and leave it better than it was before. And so it's a great exercise for a manager to even get ready for the processes that come after that offer letter is signed, for training that person, onboarding them, helping them set goals for their first, you know, 3, 6 months. So I think it's really a win-win opportunity, and it gives, again, managers that edge in a world that, you know, recruiters can't offer that kind of perspective on a job opportunity, and candidates are seeking it and attracted to it and making decisions according to it more than ever before.
It sounds great. Let's use this then as a moment to switch gears to the point of view of the job seeker, of the candidate, because we're a little over halfway done, and I know we have a lot of people who are really, just the statistics show they're not happy with their jobs, and they're looking for new ones. And I think this is an excellent opportunity to find a way to be happier at a job. So I'd really like to talk about that for a little bit. So IT pros, I think, are in a really excellent situation right now, which is that salaries are pretty high by standards of U.S. salaries right now. They're growing above the average of what salaries are growing. We've had a lot of salary stagnation in the United States since the fiscal crisis. IT jobs are going up a little faster. Their skills are desired. So we know they can get a job, or at least, you know, if you have the right qualifications, the right experience, finding a job is not the real hurdle right now. But clearly, finding the right job is still harder, and I can speak from experience with this, that finding a job that you're happy with just changes your whole life, right? So if you were a job seeker today, where would you start at finding that right cultural fit? How do you look for that?
Absolutely. Well, I think it is two sides of the same coin. For all the job seekers out there, obviously you sort of have more opportunity than ever before to find a situation where you don't have to compromise on anything. And so I think that gives this incredible opportunity to essentially, you know, make sure that culture, not perks, is the thing you're picking your job on. And that means, you know, for every interview that you may have, you know, ask people, you know, who are the kinds of people that get promoted? You know, how do you define success around here? What are the reasons why somebody may get fired? And I think if people can speak articulately and clearly to those points, basically how that company defines success, then they're actually a company that is aware of, you know, their internal culture, where that's disseminated throughout the organization, and where essentially you as an employee are empowered to be an agent of impact. You can know that you're aligned with the organization in terms of, you know, what's valued, and that the work that you do, that you apply yourself to, can get rewarded and recognized. And so I think that that kind of plugs directly into what you're saying, Dave, about, you know, happiness, true happiness, I really do think is driven by, you know, people seeing the value and impact and recognition of their work. And that is really at the core of culture as defined by, you know, how a company defines success.
Right. Are there any things that you think, like, common, I don't know if phrases are the right words, but sort of tip-offs that maybe, hey, you should run from this job. This is a place that doesn't have a clue. They don't know what is working for them. They don't know what culture they have. Are there, you know, key tip-offs to that are kind of like, you know, that you've seen in your experience that you're like, ooh, maybe this client needs to be taught a little bit more before they start going out and hiring people.
Absolutely. You know, I think definitely one that you can look out for is inconsistency. So today's, you know, job seekers, they typically have several series of interviews with people across the company. And I think if you're noticing really big inconsistencies in the way people talk about the company, in the way they talk about success, and the way they talk about the values the company has, that's a really good sign that, you know, culture hasn't really been explicitly cultivated there, that people are sort of running around and not truly in communication or not truly kind of aligned about what defines success. I think those are organizations that tend to have more silos. Those are organizations that tend to be more political. And so when you do start to hear different or maybe even conflicting things from the different interviewers you get a chance to talk to, that to me is a sign that the organization isn't mature from a cultural standpoint. I think another one is, you know, whether or not in the hiring process you're able to talk to somebody that would be a manager or a leader in your domain. The reason I think that is, you know, a pretty big signal is it basically explains how important management at the company thinks about hiring and therefore about people. I think the best organizations recognize that, you know, opening doors to candidates is important because it's an investment in the future employees. Whereas companies that are just too busy to kind of speak to a candidate, those are also companies that are more likely to be too busy to speak to you when you're an employee with a concern. So I think that that's a signal about, you know, how engaged management and leadership is in culture from the perspective of employees, because the best companies out there care a lot about the investment and the voice of employees within the company, and that starts, frankly, in the hiring process with, you know, late-stage candidates.
Right. That reminds me of a story. Our last IT Life radio episode, we had Gary Magenta on. He's an author of a book called The Unbossy Boss, and he told a very interesting story that actually made him want to write this book, which is that he uprooted his entire family to Chicago because he had this amazing interview experience with the person who would be his boss, and he thought it was a fantastic opportunity, and the boss spent a huge amount of time selling the job and selling the opportunity, all the things you're talking about, right? And he felt really comfortable. And then when he got there, he never got to talk to his boss again. And he had to just, you know, squeeze in 5 seconds here or there. And I know that that's not every boss, and that's a specific story. But are there any ways you can tell the difference between what is, was clearly an expert sales job and an honest-to-goodness culture, or is there a point where you just have to take a leap of faith?
You know, I really do think that, you know, there's always going to be kind of like the odd one out here and there, and there's always the amazing showmans. But I think what is really great about today's interview process is that you are typically nowadays talking to several touch points inside the company. On like kind of a typical interview process, folks get to talk to the recruiter, they get to talk to peers that would be kind of on the team as interviewers, they get to talk to a hiring manager who may or may not be their actual direct manager, and in increasing cases, they're able to talk to a top-level exec. So obviously, each of these stakeholders gets to give you a different perspective on the business. And I think, you know, take advantage of the chance to ask questions at the end of an interview when you're talking to somebody that would be a peer on your team. You know, ask them to crisply tell you, you know, when was the last time you had a chance to teach something to your team? You know, what's the thing you're improving on the team right now? Validate, you know, things that you're hearing from the manager with those folks. And I think usually candidates, you know, they feel a little timid about, you know, asking for anything. They feel like the power dynamics make it that they should just be polite and, you know, not be too demanding. But I actually think that today's interviewers are more than happy to speak to their work, especially if they're at a place with a great culture where they're really passionate and, you know, where they want genuinely, you know, you to join their team and to be a part of it. So, you know, I'd say take the opportunity to actually ask questions of substance. If not at the end of your interview, do it, you know, in follow-up over email. Most people are absolutely happy to, you know, share kind of like contact information. And really at the bottom line is for every stakeholder, feel free to ask a different set of questions that corroborates, you know, basically the story you're hearing from the other stakeholder. And peers versus managers can offer really different but valuable perspectives. So leverage all the touch points that you have throughout that interview process and really think about it as, you know, seeking mutual fit.
Right. And I think you make a really important point, which is that if they're not willing to answer those questions, then they probably aren't a company you really want to work for.
It would definitely not be a good sign.
Well, so this brings up something, though, that I think is interesting about large companies, right? A lot of really large companies have pocket cultures, mini cultures, right, around managers. It's a sort of reality. You have 50, 100,000 people or whatever. One giant culture is nice, but to a certain degree, it's kind of impossible, right? Sometimes a culture is just built around a manager and in his or her small team, right? How do you know when you enter a job that the culture you get exposed to by the people you talk to is going to mesh with the larger culture you may or may not be exposed to?
Yeah, that's a tricky question. I mean, especially, you know, you hear a lot of stories about, let's say, like really top-level C-suite culture, you know, not meshing with, you know, the grassroots organic culture when a company hits a certain stage of growth and they start bringing in, you know, a new kind of like layer of executives. I definitely think that that's a big risk to, you know, an individual who's trying to evaluate a company, compare opportunities side by side. And I really do think then that it's, you know, worth kind of, you know, asking kind of whether you really do have faith in the organization from a strategic standpoint. I think IT folks nowadays are able to be pretty savvy about evaluating the stage of a company's growth, the kind of, you know, top-level leadership goals. Recruiting is a fantastic asset in that sense. They're really able to speak to, you know, where the company's heading at a macro level and to kind of, you know, paint the picture of what the top-level C C-suite initiatives are. And I'd say take the opportunity to ask about that with your recruiting partner. I think a lot of IT folks are skeptical of recruiters. They're not sure what value they can add. But, you know, in the best case scenario, the recruiter may be able to introduce you to somebody at the company that can speak to that experience. And, you know, just like employers back channel, you know, with on candidates, you might want to back channel on the company. Really try to meet somebody who either is working there currently or has worked there in the past, and, you know, ask kind of intelligent but direct questions about where they see kind of the company going and how much confidence they have in, say, leadership's alignment with, you know, kind of the goals that the candidate has been hearing in the interview process. I'd say people just invest more in their career moves nowadays than they ever did before, and that then leads to new opportunities for thinking about how you really are making your decision and possibly even doing due diligence on the companies that you're considering.
Great. Well, unfortunately, we're getting really short on time here. I feel like we could talk for hours and hours. I hope I can have you back at another time. But I just want to ask a real quick question and then a sort of final summary question. The quick question is, I know you're more on the recruiting end, but I'm guessing you have experience to answer this question. Let's say I'm an IT pro and I find myself, I just took a job, I realize I've made a huge mistake. I just don't fit culturally the way I thought. I'm realizing that my skill set is not the fit for this. It's not the place that I should be at. They need a different kind of person. I'm not working out here. What do I do?
You know, I think that this is a fantastic question, and the answer is simple but difficult. And I think it's be willing to have those really real and direct conversations with the relevant people, usually your manager, maybe your recruiting partner. Something that candidates don't realize is there's actually a really hard cost to hire. Like, you can measure it in dollars. And so companies are really motivated to retain people. And I think that that motivation can translate often into, you know, really fantastic, positive, and radical action to make the fit work. Right? So it's worth definitely a conversation with, you know, your manager or with HR about, you know, are there actual steps that can lead to the change that actually does make this work out. You know, I think sometimes people have a tendency to suffer in silence. And, you know, culture fits can be the kind of thing where just having a direct conversation can bring to light something that was so subtle or nuanced that people didn't realize this, you know, without somebody raising the flag. So there is actual value to every employee that is hired. It's a sunk cost that I think for an employee becomes leverage to inspire and promote change. So the very first step I'd say is don't be afraid to have that conversation and to know that, you know, this is something that not only can help you as an individual, but has the potential actually to help the business overall. Like, again, today's workforce is so motivated by their opportunities to improve the business, and shifting the culture in a more positive direction might be something that improves the business holistically. But if you do find after that conversation that it's absolutely not going to work, I do actually think there's kind of a new spirit of openness around, you know, kind of like making the decision to transition out. I've heard a lot of circumstances from, you know, our recruiting customers where they're actually really relieved when somebody is proactive and open about identifying a misfit and, you know, being kind of like engaged with their manager in actually designing a transition out. There's a new maturity around sort of like the movement between companies nowadays. It's something that, frankly, a lot of people attribute the innovation in Silicon Valley to that. And I think the more, I guess, like hands-on somebody is on their actual career and the more they sort of treat the relationship with their manager or their employer at kind of like a really strategic and kind of high level, the more likely it is that everybody feels great about, you know, the top-level career decisions, whether to stay or whether to go, and that you retain those professional contacts, that network, you know, for life.
Wonderful. Well, unfortunately, I only have time for this one last question, But I think it's a really nice way we need to sum up everything in a nice bow for our listeners. Let's say I am listening to this podcast and I'm really excited about this. I'm really looking forward to finding a job where I'm a good fit, or I'm excited about being a hiring manager that really starts to think about these things. What are the couple of steps I should really start with, both from the point of view of a hiring manager and from a job seeker, to really get into this and really start thinking about this better? Where do I need to start?
Absolutely. You know, I think step one is definitely making sure that you know how to articulate culture as the definition of success, right? Run through the exercise of identifying, you know, either for the employer who are the top performers and why, or if you are a job seeker, you know, what are the instances in your past that you were most proud of? What were the situations where you were most motivated, driven, where you felt, you know, like the most kind of excited about getting out of bed and going to work? And start to break down, you know, what those really meant to you, like what were the attributes, what were the qualities of those projects or of the work that you were doing that really triggered that next level kind of successful situation. And then, of course, you know, for kind of job seekers, that's to, you know, be on the lookout for companies that have, you know, those attributes as being central to either their company values, the way they talk about, you know, their product or their customers or the way they run their teams. And for an employer, I'd say the most pragmatic first step to putting, you know, culture to action is to fold it into your hiring process, fold it into your job descriptions, fold it into your interview formats and your interview training. And, you know, basically, I think if you continue to hire people based on a culture defined by success, that then creates the positive feedback loops that make it that investment pay off over and over again in the long run. So I think it's actually really practical. Culture, despite having a fluffy reputation, actually has some really concrete steps that both employers and job seekers can take to basically create, you know, an even better place for people to work and for people to thrive.
Great. Well, I know I feel like I understand culture so much more than I did before this call. So I really want to thank you, Sarah, for being on the show today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Dave.
Yeah. Well, and now we come to the end of our show. We were just listening to Sarah Nahm, CEO of Lever, a software recruiting firm. She was talking about culture. I hope you heard. If not, listen to the archive. It'll be available in just a few moments. Next show, we believe, is going to be in 2 weeks. We're still nailing down a date, but we're confident that the guest is going to be John Underkoffler. John is actually known in many circles as the real Tony Stark. He's the person who designed the user interface for Jarvis in the Iron Man movies, as well as many of the things you've seen in other movies, including Minority Report. He's a user interface expert. We're going to talk with him about virtual reality and why it falls short, which I think is a really fascinating concept coming from the real Tony Stark. We believe that's going to be July 29th, but we're still nailing down a date. I hope to see you then. In the meantime, thanks, everybody, for listening. We could not do this without you. In fact, we wouldn't even try. So thank you for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.